Hey, man, is that the Rock News Weekly podcast?
Yeah, man. Well, turn it up, man.
This is Rock News Weekly. Every week, we bring you all the latest headlines in rock, metal, indie, grunge, alt, and classic rock news, this week's new releases, this week in music history trivia, movies, pop culture, and more. Now, on to this week's episode. This week on the Rock News Weekly podcast, week of May 8th, 2023, season 5, episode number 18. This week, we're talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. 2023 inductees have been announced. We'll go through that list. Thurston Moore announcing his new memoir, Sonic Life. A guitar smashed and signed by Kurt Cobain goes up for auction, and Fall Out Boy releases their new album on vinyl, filled with their own tears. Plus, this week in rock and roll history trivia, weekly WTF, and so much more, everything's up at rocknewsweekly.com. Watch us live, twitch.tv/rocknewsweekly, every Sunday around 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and if you miss it, we're on demand, youtube.com/rocknewsweekly.
All right, it's time for the Rock News Weekly podcast. What's up, everybody? Chris here, as well as David. How's it going, David?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Another week behind us. We gotta get filled in on all the hot topics and news of the week. So let's do it. Let's delve right into it. This week here of May 8th, season 5, episode number 18. Big announcement with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 2023 inductees. For better or worse, some controversy around it. We'll talk about that. Thurston Moore from Sonic Youth announcing his very first memoir. It's called Sonic Life, which sounds really cool. I'm interested in this. Also made headlines this week, a guitar smashed and signed by Kurt Cobain goes up for auction. We'll see how much it's supposed going to get this week. Fall Out Boy releases their new album on vinyl filled with their own tears. They actually have a trademark for this. It's called Crinal. And there's a website, I swear, and it comes with a tissue box and everything. It's over the top. We'll talk about that and more. This week in Rock and Roll History Trivia, weekly WTF, everything's up. Rocknewsweekly.com. You can support us there for $3.99 a month. Anchor.fm/rocknewsweekly/subscribe. We're online, of course, twitch.tv, like you're watching right now. Some of us chat with us. Watch us live every Sunday around 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. But if you miss it, we're on demand, YouTube at Rock News Weekly, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all the same thing. All right. Last week, David, you were out, and this was the big announcement last week. So I thought we'd just talk about it briefly again and the tour dates. The Aerosmith final tour announcement that was last week. They've added the Black Crowes now as the supporting artist act. So, final tour. They're calling it the Peace Out Tour. The initial 40 dates. So, this is just the first half of this. Apparently, it's going to probably, I imagine, go on worldwide with this for the next couple years. Black Crowes going to be the special guest. And here's some of the dates. Tickets went on sale this past Friday. Here's a lot of the dates here. Kicks off September 2nd, Philadelphia. Goes everywhere, basically. December 1st and December 4th, we are getting the dates here in California. We will have tickets to give away for 105.7 The Bear, so make sure you guys tune in. So what do you think about this news, Aerosmith piecing out their final tour?
You know, what a beautiful circle of life.
It is a beautiful circle of life sometimes, right?
I was just thinking the news of the Black Crowes being on there with them. Seems kind of appropriate.
Definitely a good opener.
Yeah.
I think it's right along with the style of the band.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get those co-bills or opening acts that don't really mesh well, but I think this is a good...
The spirit, right?
Yeah, and the sound. There. I think, you know, the Black Crowes have that kind of bluesy hard rock sound with that kind of wild frontman kind of approach. I think it fits right in there.
Yeah, I mean, this is bittersweet. This is like, I think for me, the first... modern like rock and roll artists that I was aware of were
Aerosmith.
Probably Aerosmith.
Yeah, I mean, you think about that big comeback that they had in the 90s. It was huge. When Get a Grip came out, and then before that, they had their help with Wayne's World, kind of giving them a boost back into the rock mainstream. They've had their ups and downs, though, right? I mean, Steven Tyler definitely, the notorious 80s for Aerosmith, which was really, really bad.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing the Steven Tyler recently relapse. Did you hear about that? He got off some surgery. He was on some medication. And unfortunately, it was prescribed by his doctor, but ended up, kind of relapsing because of those opioids. Kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, yeah. I heard a big thing. He's because he's friends with Ted Nugent or something like that. And
I'm
some...
sure he's. Yeah, they're friends with all the rockers.
And
what about Ted though?
Well, I can't remember exactly, but it was you know. Well, never mind. Never mind. Don't want to get into Ted Nugent. But,
well, Ted Nugent's always a hot topic. We know that.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I think this is a. It's a beautiful thing. It's a sad thing.
Yeah.
It's their final tour. But
you ever seen him live, Aerosmith?
No.
This might be the one to see. This might be the one.
Yeah, how what do you think those tickets are running?
I would say they started about 75.
Okay.
60,
where would
70.
You, so outside of California.
Outside
where
of California.
Would you see, what do you think would be the best place to see Aerosmith?
In their hometown, definitely.
Okay.
In Massachusetts.
All right.
They haven't announced any of those dates, and I think they're saving that for something special. If you noticed here, there's no New Year's Eve dates. I wonder.
I wonder if
there's going to be a big New Year's Eve announcement in their hometown of Boston.
Yep.
They got their reputation, the Bad Boys from Boston. That's Aerosmith's nickname, and I think
that's
that
how they got their British accent.
Their half-assed British accent. No, but I think they're doing something big for my
New England.
I think they're doing something big on that New England area for New Year's Eve. That's my guess. Oh, here it is.
Good guess.
Here it is. I don't know why I overlooked that. Why it says December 4th here.
Oh, there you go.
But yeah, that's supposed to be January 4th, December 31st, Boston, Massachusetts, at the TD Garden. So there you go.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That's going to be the show right there.
That's such a good question I asked.
It was a good question.
That was a really good question.
And because it pointed out this error right here, too, because that's supposed to be January 4th, not December 4th. And yes, New Year's Eve in Boston. And then they're in New Jersey.
That does sound fun. You ever been to Boston?
I have never been to Boston.
That, I have to say.
I know.
That's a great place.
I'd love
Boston
to.
Boston is a really nice city.
How many times? Just once? Once or twice?
I've been
or?
Once, but I stayed for a week.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was at a conference, and so... It was just me just walking around. I didn't have a car or anything.
How
so
was
I
the food?
Walked.
How was the culture, you know? Like
you know, I have to say
it's pretty rough, you know, like the mean streets of Boston.
No. Boston is a place that it seems like it feels like a neighborhood. Like
nice, yeah.
Like
yeah.
You can walk. I walked, you know, and all the famous things you hear about in Boston,
mm-hmm.
You just walk and then all of a sudden they're there. You know, I was like, oh.
All in the same kind of.
You know, there's,
yep.
There's, what's the name of the field? Not Wrigley. Gosh, I can't think of the name of the field.
Oh, the Red Sox.
Where the Red Sox play.
Yeah, I forget too. Fenway?
Fenway Park, right? You
yeah.
Just walk and you're like, oh, Fenway Park. And all these universities, I mean, they're just
yes.
Stacked next to
huge
each other.
Huge college town. Yeah, very cool. That's going to be the show, man. New Year's Eve in Boston. So there you go. All right, so other big announcement this week. This was the other big announcement that got some controversy. As you know, Iron Maiden was one of the nominees. Didn't get in there.
Yeah.
Iron Maiden didn't get in there for, you know, it's been like almost 20 years since they've been eligible.
I mean, I have to say, this is very surprising to me.
What's surprising?
I love Rage Against the Machine.
Yep.
But don't you think Iron Maiden has... I mean, they've paid their dues.
I think so, yeah. There's a lot more other... There's a lot of other... There's a whole list of all these bands that haven't been inducted.
I mean, Sheryl Crow? Come on. I'm sorry. That's... I mean, but... Come on. Like, Iron Maiden? No. And Sheryl Crow? Yes. Like,
same thing with Missy Elliott. I mean, you know, I think she's very revolutionary. She's very unique. I respect her as an artist. But getting... Missy Elliott getting in there
before
Iron Maiden,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Is like, that's...
Do you know how it all works?
I don't. And honestly, I think they should just change it at this point to the Popular Music Hall of Fame or All Genres Hall of Fame.
Yeah, we kind of talked about this, huh?
Yeah, because it's not rock and roll. This is... I mean, if we look at it, there's two bands on here or two artists that I feel are rock and roll. Rage Against the Machine and Link Wray. Link Wray basically... invented the power chord. He's one of the kings of surf guitar. He revolutionized distortion. He was one of the very first that did that. I mean, he is, if anybody out of all of these guys should be up there, it's Link Wray for rock and roll. But then I feel like George Michael can be wedged in there. I feel like Willie Nelson can be wedged in there. And honestly, I feel like Chaka Khan, DJ Kool Herc also have kind of a place in there during that 80s era of meshing of popular music with rock and roll. Now, Bernie Taupin, he was the writer behind Elton John's music. He was Elton John's co-writer, so he definitely deserves a place there. Mm-hmm. You know, Elton John's in there, and Bernie should be in there too, because he wrote all the music and lyrics that Elton John sang. So it's a weird thing, man. I mean, like, it happens every year. They do this. They throw in these wild cards, and I don't know if they do it to stir up controversy to advertise for themselves somehow. But they know that they're kind of pushing buttons by adding these artists the way they do.
So I have a theory.
What's your theory?
That I just came up with. It's partially formed. Okay. Some of these, you know, you look at Willie Nelson, for example.
Yes.
Willie Nelson, he's country music. I mean, like, officially, like, he's a country music country musician. However, like, the audience of country music would take Willie Nelson in, and definitely he's an important country musician. But I feel like in some ways, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame it's no longer necessarily, as you said, rock and roll, but it is the mainstream of music that is culturally acceptable.
Yeah, or relevant.
Right,
or,
yeah, culturally relevant.
Like, innovative.
Like, you wouldn't have other country musicians getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you're not going to have Vince Gill
in
the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but they inducted Dolly Parton last year, right? Now she's coming out with a rock and roll album. She has all these artists, and it, like, inspired her to do something, which is pretty cool. I know that Willie Nelson, along with, you know, like, Johnny Cash is another great example of someone who deserves to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
He covered that track from...
Marilyn Manson?
Trent Reznor.
Oh, yeah.
Nails.
Yeah, Trent Reznor.
But, yeah, he was ingrained and intertwined in rock and roll culture in that way, you know? And I feel like Willie Nelson, you can make that argument in a lot of ways. I mean, he's that kind of guy. He's always Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
You know, all these people. He's one of those guys that, like, he gets a pass in my mind.
So maybe, like,
and he plays guitar. So, yeah. You know what I mean? A lot of these other guys, I couldn't say that. George Michael plays guitar, sure. But, I mean, he's been passed for how long? And we're posthumously adding him in here when we have Iron Maiden fully alive and well, you know, who have not been nominated. And wouldn't you want some of these guys to see this stuff in their lifetime? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of a slap in the face to those guys. When we're going to induct George Michael, who's barely rock and roll, and he's dead, over Iron Maiden, who's alive and well and just put out a new album last year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that kind of stuff, that's what doesn't sit well with the rock community. And I don't think it's ever going to change. So it's just unfortunate, and we just have to accept it. It's just a slap in the face, this whole rock and roll moniker. It should be the Music Hall of Fame. Just
now,
and
the thing I wondered about is, I have a friend who, he is a filmmaker, and he was telling me about how films are nominated for the Oscars.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily have to do with how good the film is.
No.
In some cases.
It's almost like who you know.
It has
who your producer was,
like,
who your manager was.
And like how much money went into such and such, and then that gets you a certain amount of votes. And it was a really kind of complex, esoteric system. So I'm wondering if it's something like that. Like,
I have a feeling.
A whole bunch of wrangling.
Yeah, I have a feeling.
Behind the scenes.
And I feel like that's why a lot of people are disenfranchised. A lot of the rockers and a lot of people are like, they don't give a shit if they're inducted or not, because they know that it's basically just a bunch of glad-handing managers patting each other on the back, record label executives, you know, giving people the green light, that kind of stuff. It has nothing to do with if you're rock and roll and if you're innovative.
Deals.
Yeah.
Dirty deeds done dirt cheap.
But not dirt cheap. These are the expensive deeds.
These are not dirt done.
Yeah.
Done dirt cheap.
So, yeah. So, what do you think? What do you think is a proper name for, I think, the Music Hall of Fame? What do you think?
Yeah, I'd say the cool music. Those considered cool music Hall of Fame.
Yeah. That's a good, all right, we'll go with that.
I'm really happy we got Rage Against the Machine and George Michael and both a couple of commies. I'm good with that. So.
Right? We've got to start.
Start small.
Dismantle it from the inside
right now.
Yep. Get our Trojan horse in there.
Right.
All right. Let's move on. Some more rock news this week. Smashed Kurt Cobain guitar going up for auction. Julian's Auctions. This is the picture of the guitar here. If you notice, it's got some inscription here, and we'll read what some of the inscription says. He actually signed this to Mark Lanegan, the lead singer of the Screaming Trees, and he said on the signing here, "Hello, Mark. Love your pal Kurt Cobain, washed-up rock star. It's expected to sell between 60,000 and 80,000.
80,000.
Not that much, right? To be honest.
And it's broken. It doesn't even work.
To have the comparison, though, last year's Kurt Cobain Smash guitar sold for over $480,000 at auction. Another Cobain guitar, the 1959 Martin D18E he played during the Unplugged special, holds the record for the most expensive guitar ever sold at auction. It went for $6 million in 2020. Isn't that wild?
Isn't that really just what Kurt Cobain was going for? Right?
He just loves hearing that, I'm sure.
He just loved that. He probably, you know, looking down from above, he just smiles, pushes his hair out of his face.
Yeah, just smiles, be like, oh, that's great that Wall Street hedge fund guy has my acoustic guitar locked up
like
in his million-dollar mansion.
Scrully type mother.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Check this out. I've got the Wu-Tang album.
Yeah, I got the Wu-Tang unreleased Wu-Tang album. Nobody's heard it.
Yep. But, I mean, shoot. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, hopefully some of these auctions like go to charity and stuff, but I don't think that's going to happen with this.
Only three little machine heads left.
Yeah,
there.
Three little Dainty tuners.
Three little machine heads.
All right. So there you go. Thurston Moore, new memoir he's got coming out. It's called Sonic Life. Thurston Moore's new memoir. It's his first memoir ever, and it's going to be kind of interesting. He's got a storied career with Sonic Youth coming out on October 24th. It says, quote, "The whirlwind of experiences that being in Sonic Youth entailed in his new memoir, Sonic Life, on Doubleday Books, blah, blah, blah." On his socials, he shared, quote, "The story of my childhood and teenage years as I fell in love with music, for the most part, unbridled rock and roll, and how it drove me to New York City, where I would co-found Sonic Youth. It's an adventure that would take me around the globe through the 80s, 90s, and onward, engaging with the magic music of visionaries, artists, and wild angels, turning the world on its ear. The book has been ages in the making, product of intensive research and deep dives into my memories and emotions." So there you go. Pretty cool, right?
I mean, I don't know if it's the sort of similar, ethno community or something like that, but I mean, that sounds pretty cool. I like
it. It really does. It's that era of New York City around that time, and then having his kind of perspective going through it is going to be really neat to read.
Yeah, so. I love learning about people who got to become creative in a new way.
Yeah, the history of how they got there and the stories behind it is really cool.
Kind of reminds me of someone like Ray Barbie in skateboarding, you know?
Yeah, yes, definitely. That authentic kind of storytelling.
Yeah.
Very cool. So that's coming out October 24th. All right, here we go. Crinal. It's time to cry.
Yeah, I got
to
hear. Look at this.
Okay, so yes, Fallout Boy is selling their upcoming album, So Much for Stardust, infused with their own tears. The iconic band has introduced this thing called Crinal. It's trademarked, and it's a limited edition vinyl process infused with their real actual tears, supposedly. The first of its kind drop launches with 50 double-sided LPs sealed with the band's tears, available now at crinal.com for $99.99. Each Crinal package comes with a built-in, fully functional tissue dispenser. So definitely going full emo on this release here. Now, a couple questions. Do you think they're actual real tears? They say that it's their real, actual tears. You think?
So how did they? This is how did they extract them?
I don't know.
Did they do like question. Spank them or something?
Make them watch that Sarah McLachlan, the pet video.
Oh yes.
Over like, and over.
Over and over.
Like
just like the
Clockwork Orange, and they had their eyes pried open like Clockwork Orange, and then they just had like a little tube going from their eyes. Into a reservoir.
Just a little reservoir. Well, no, so this is the question, though. So if those are their real tears, is this going to be like Jurassic Park? Like, could you take this crinal in a thousand
could
years?
Could I get the DNA from the lead
the
singer
DNA
and then create a baby from it?
Make
yeah.
a little tiny little baby?
Could be.
Now, I have to admit something. Yeah. I don't think I have ever. So, this is good that they're doing this because
yes.
I don't think I have ever once on purpose listened to a Fall Out Boy song.
Well, this might get you.
So,
in
so
there,
that's
right?
what I'm saying.
Right.
I mean, I might get this.
Now, okay, also, have you
Check
ever
it out,
seen
I got a crinal, which is
have you ever seen liquid-filled vinyl before?
I have not, and that's cool.
I've seen it one time. This other band, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, they're known for their
very good
extravagant vinyl releases. They've released like something like 50
what kind
albums.
Of music is that?
It's like alternative
King
rock.
Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard?
Yeah, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Yeah.
I like that.
I'll have to show you something from them. They're pretty avant-garde.
Okay.
But they had a blood-filled vinyl that went viral, and it was obviously fake blood, but it was liquid just like this on clear vinyl, and you could see the blood like moving around, and just like this, it seems like this the crinal, the liquid inside, as the record turns, you can see the liquid kind of moving
so
around.
So it's got a little cavity.
Yeah,
in there.
It's got some kind of a little chasm.
Does that weaken the vinyl?
Apparently not.
Will the needle scratch through everything and just get a
No, I guess
eventually?
It's double-sided, so I mean, I don't know. It's something in the process there. They're able to achieve
this,
that.
This kind of reminds me of those things that you could get in the 80s and you touch them and if your hand was warm, it would turn
yeah.
purple or green or whatever.
Remember
the
they had
when
t-shirts
are they
like
with
that.
Vinyls like that?
They had t-shirts like that. Oh, those were so cool.
I think this is... I love...
You know what you could do with this,
gimmick,
too?
Man.
Somebody's got to do a YouTube video on this. Buy it. Slice it open and then drink the tears and do a video.
That's it. Reminds me once of a bumper sticker I saw on someone's car that said "Fueled by liberal tears."
Right.
I thought, wow,
that's what fuels
that's
my
cool.
engine.
Like that's the solution to climate change. If
tear production management.
Right?
All right, more rock news this week. Check it out. A new album just came out on Friday from Smashing Pumpkins. It's their Autumn Act 3, the third and final installment of the band's ongoing cycle, Autumn, a Rock Opera in Three Parts. So this album is supposedly directly linked thematically to the double LP Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness from 1995. So this is a continuation, supposedly in the characters and the theme, from that album. Billy Corgan was saying a lot of people don't really know about that, and he says, quote, "Most people don't know what the records are really about. They're focused on their favorite song or their favorite drum solo or whatever. It's totally fine. The last 20-something years of social media have taught me to respect the fact that everybody has their own level of engagement, and any engagement is good," end quote. So I think that's a pretty good outlook on it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just going to be that kind of angry artist like, you guys don't get what I'm trying to say.
He'll just be filled with
I love that song. Yeah, it's so cool.
And he's like, that's like a song about my dog dying and you don't really understand or something, right? So that's got to be frustrating for an artist. So
I hadn't heard about this. I love the Melancholy and Infinite Sadness mm-hmm. album. So
you got to check this one out. Autumn, Act 3. It's out now. All right, so speaking of the Aerosmith tour, here's an old picture of Joe Perry and Joey Kramer, the original drummer from Aerosmith. He's been with the band for a long time, but he's sitting out on the farewell tour. So Joe Perry explained why co-founding Aerosmith drummer Joey Kramer will be sitting out of the band's upcoming farewell tour, but hinted at the chance he might be able to join in. He says he was talking to a radio station in Chicago, and he says, "His heart's in the right place, but listen, playing the drums is an athletic event, and there's a certain point where every joint starts to give out, man. So at this point, we're not thinking he's going to be there. We'll see." End quote. That's Joe Perry talking about Joey Kramer. What do you think of that?
I can feel it, you know.
That's brutally honest.
My feet hurt. So
all of our joints
40,
are hurting
so.
These days. Yeah, and we're 40.
I can imagine, dude. Shoulders. That's a lot of work. Right, that is a lot
yeah,
of work.
Yeah, drumming for 2 hours each night.
That's not the wrist work that you do.
Yeah,
you know,
not
guitar,
just sitting there.
So.
No, drumming's a full body. Yeah, all over the place, right?
Well, I mean, I kind of wonder, though. I mean, so he will not even be with the band?
Well, it says, so at this point, we're thinking he's not going to be there. We'll see. So it kind of leaves it open-ended.
I mean, it would be nice if he, like, showed up sometime.
Maybe for the New Year's Eve show kind of thing.
Yeah,
or like
a special. Maybe that's what will
some of the hometown shows, but not for the major run. Or maybe he'll be there. I know they did this. I can't remember what band it was, but they had him come out for, like, an hour or, like, maybe 4 or 5 songs, and then the other drummer took over.
Yeah, that kind, like, of I thing. Could see that.
Come out for the big, the group favorites, the big hits, and then have the other drummer take over the rest of the show.
And that's a big...
And that would still be pretty cool. You know? A lot of fans would love that. Yeah. You know, fans love that kind of thing, but they don't like that. The drummer feels like he's playing second fiddle. He's sitting backstage for most of the show. You know, they feel like neutering him, you know?
That makes sense.
You know, it feels like, oh, I could do it. It's all or nothing. And that happened with Black Sabbath a couple... it wasn't a couple. It was like 10 years ago when they did their final tour. Bill Ward had this conversation with Ozzy and all those guys. Ozzy said, you can't do it. We want this younger drummer to come do it, but you can come do like 4 or 5 songs. And he's like, no, I want to do everything, all or nothing. And then it was...
I guess it's really not that cut and dry because you know, he might want to do it, but they might say, you know, you can't.
That's why he says his heart's
it.
In the right place.
Yeah.
But physically, can you really handle that, man? Yeah. You know? Anyway. All right, so this was another hot topic this week. Fans suspected Tom DeLonge used auto-tune at Coachella. So did you see any of the footage from Coachella? Blink-182 playing. They were the surprise kind of guests there at Coachella.
Mm-mm.
You see any of that footage? All right, so a lot of people were questioning that he was using auto-tune. So let's actually listen to some of this, and let's see what you guys think.
Sounds like trap music.
Sounds like trap music. Okay, so I don't want to get DMCA'd there, but you get the point. What do you think? Oh, just hearing that little...
It sounded like it to me.
Sounded like auto-tune, pitch correction. A lot of people saying it's definite pitch correction. I don't know.
How do you do that?
Well,
they got like someone on the switchboard?
There's somebody there actively with a plug-in, like you would in the studio. And it's got pitch correction, and it kind of gives them that help, that extra little,
What do they need that for?
Hitting those notes, I guess people are saying. So let's read some more of this article. I didn't copy the whole article, actually, now that I'm reading it. So people are saying that since, you know, they used to have very kind of high-pitched, teenage, angsty voices from the 1990s, 2000s, now their voices are very deeper and can't hit those notes. And so feel like they need maybe a little bit of extra help to kind of stay in tune with those kind of... You know,
yeah.
So we were talking about this on the radio. Do you think this may be a trend of bands of this style and from this era, kind of needing a little bit of extra help as we get into this kind of like 30-year mark of a lot of these '90s bands? Do you think we're
like
gonna
a
be
new
seeing
genre,
you know?
Right?
Yeah,
it's like MXPX,
right on
like,
auto-tune,
right?
In their
MXPX
senior years.
And Travis Scott. Blah, 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 right?
Well, I mean, we know Travis Barker's definitely hip hop. I mean, he's got his own label that he supports hip hop artists. And so I'm sure maybe that's, you know.
Well, there is. I mean, there is
some
the
Blink
spirit,
stuff.
The spirit of hip hop and punk.
Oh, definitely.
Very close.
They're hand in hand.
Yeah, so I mean. I don't see any shame in it.
I don't either.
You're trying to sing, and it's an artistic
I see him,
effort.
Yeah, I see
just
him as
be kind of honest about it.
That's the key. Right? And I think that Tom DeLonge has been known for like doing kind of weird auditory stuff, effects, and different stuff with his experimental. So embrace it.
Yeah, just
don't
be like,
run away from it though. You know.
Yes, indeed, I have done such.
Right. That's what I think. That's their angle. It should be anyway.
He doesn't have. I mean. Well, if he could get some ball jack, and that might make his
you know
voice
that's
go
a great point,
up.
David.
Why don't we talk? Why don't we hear some from Ball Jack? Because Ball Jack, you know, maybe they'd like to get a sponsorship with Ball Jack.
It seems opportune.
I think so.
Apropos.
I think you're right. Why don't we play an ad from Ball Jack so you guys can hear all about it.
So. Well, here's another. This is another genre as well.
Ooh, let's do the compadre.
And now a message from one of our sponsors.
What's for dinner, Jeb?
Same thing as always, Ted.
Well, hell, refresh my memory now, Jeb.
Always beans, Ted. Beans and corn in a jar, Ted. That's what we're doomed to eat on this dusty trail.
And for breakfast tomorrow?
Beans.
And for lunch?
Corn.
And for a snack?
Beans and corn. Just not as much. It's a snack, Ted.
Well, hell!
Welcome to the dusty trail, my friend.
Shut up, Jeb. I'll tell you what. 10 years, Jeb. All we get is some goddamn beans and corn for rustling the herd day and night. You can real slowly, like, shove that dusty full jar of corn straight up your... Wait, someone's a-coming. Who the hell is you?
Are you the dusty trailblazers I'm looking for?
Who's asking, stranger?
Balljack Man is asking, compadres. Looking for trailblazers to quench that dusty thirst with my balljack.
Partner, did you just say balljack?
That's what he said, Ted.
Shut up, Jeb.
Looks like I showed up just in time. This blend of taurine and tiger's tears, caffeine, and the blood of a mango is just what you need to perk up your dusty trailblazing throats.
Now I remember. I heard of you, mister. You turn worn-out old cow dogs like us into hammer-jacking trailblazing machines.
Did he just say blood of a mango?
You're goddamn right.
America, now grab this ball jack. Open it wide up for your dusty trailblazing compadre there. And give him a fat dose of this liquid ambrosia.
Hell yeah!
Tastes hot.
Damn right. It better. It comes straight from my dusty trailblazing heart. Now giddy up, le chevalry.
Huh?
Shut up, Jeb.
And remember, my cow-poking compadres, you can reach over and grab your partner's ball jack anytime to quench that dusty trailblazing thirst after purchasing a load at your nearest convenience store.
You mean convenience store, right?
You're goddamn right.
Laissez-le le bon temps rouler, muchachos.
Huh?
We're saved. Look at him go. That dusty trailblazer.
But he stole beans and corn.
What the hell?
Then where's my wallet?
Balljack, reach for it today.
Good old Balljack, man. So maybe that's what Tom needs. Maybe that's
just
what Tom
jack
needs.
Jack those right up. Help you know, them.
Help him out
the
with the vocals. He'd be hitting
higher.
Those notes all day long. Right? Wouldn't even have to worry about it. All right. Well, let's get into some birthdays. We got some birthdays. Take it away, David.
Bill Ward of Black Sabbath is 75 years old.
Bill Ward.
He's got 75. Two microphones there.
I know, he's got two, just in case one goes out.
Right?
He's got a backup right there.
Right. Chris Shiflett, guitarist of the Foo Fighters, is 52.
52.
Bill Kreutzmann, the drummer of the Grateful Dead and the Other Ones and the Trichromes, is 77.
He is.
Prairie Prince, drummer of the Tubes, Jefferson Starship, and New Cars, is 73, and that look on his face, I don't know what to say about it.
It's kind of creepy.
He does remind me of a... Sorry, I won't say it.
Maybe he's thinking of eating your flesh. I don't know.
Right?
I'm trying to
that
think
smile
of...
just looks a little
yes.
bit...
Prayer come to prairie.
And does he have a soul patch there?
I think he does.
Really
a very
like he's
faint.
Got a soul patch and then that
very
necklace
faint.
There.
Yep. Oh, yeah. He's got like a choker.
This had to be in the 2000s.
The glasses there and his lanyard of some kind.
I like. And his name is Prairie Prince. So he's cool.
He is cool.
All right. Pete Staples, bassist of the Trogs.
In his grandmother's living room.
Right? 79 years old.
I could not find a photo of this guy.
I'm wondering how recent this
he's
is.
On the
looks,
right.
Looks
he's,
pretty I mean, shoot, he's 79 years old.
Looks yeah, like a, that's pretty recent.
Looks like a
he's doing cherub. All right. I know, right?
It's wonderful.
A youthful cherub.
Bob Henrit, drummer of Argent and the Kinks, 79 years old.
Here he is.
Or is that Argent?
Reminiscing on his youthful days.
Ah, look at me.
Ah, yes.
Yes, that was me on the kit in my overalls. My overalls. Oh, I still have those overalls.
The cold buckles brushed my nipples.
I loved it. Made me play with more angst.
All right.
Lou Gramm, former singer of Foreigner, is 73.
He's hitting those high notes there.
He's using ball jack.
Do you think he's actually burping, maybe? That could be a... I think that's a belch.
Jerry Weiss, trumpeter. He's the... What does that mean? He's the trumpeter?
He plays a
What's
trumpet.
What's he doing on that piano, though?
I know. I couldn't find, for the life of me, dude. All the photos of him on the trumpet were from, like, 1970.
Okay.
And so I tried to find a recent photo of him. I don't think he plays the trumpet anymore.
I gotta say, of all the people that I've ever seen in any of the pictures on this show...
Uh-huh.
I want to look like that guy when I'm 77.
I know.
He looks cool.
He does look cool. And
he looks cool.
He looks like Donald Fagen from Steely Dan or something.
Right?
He looks pretty cool.
He's
pretty
77, by the way.
All right, we got some trivia. Let's do some trivia. Let's get to it.
This week
in rock and roll history,
trivia.
Time for some trivia. Let's do it. This week in rock and roll history trivia, this week in 1968. This band plays their final show ever in Long Beach. Who was it? Was it A, Procol Harum, B, Herman's Hermits, C, Buffalo Springfield, or was it D, David Crosby's Cocaine Flower Hour? David Crosby with rose-colored glasses and a soiled leather poncho with 20 hits of acid underneath his bandana, sweating and seeping into his brain, slowly making him insane as he rolls around in filth and mud.
That last part there.
Yeah, it's a good visual.
That really, gosh, sells it, reminds me of the Beautiful People video. They're riding around, riding a pig or something like that.
Oh, yeah, riding a pig, yeah.
Covered in, like, pigeon crap or something.
I think he was in, like, a dominatrix outfit or something crazy.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, I get these wrong every week.
I think you've gotten one or two right before.
I think
before.
When you veered into like the folk stuff, if it was a question on Woody Guthrie, I got that one right.
Yes.
Right? I know a little bit about that.
Sure.
All right. So, I'm going to go with Herman's Hermits.
All right.
Yeah.
This band playing their final show in Long Beach, California. Who was it? David's going with Herman's Hermits. What do we got? Oh, Buffalo Springfield.
Wrong again.
Buffalo Springfield
plays their
final show in Long Beach. This was a pretty cool little super group at the time with Neil Young and Stephen Stills. Would later go on to do Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and all that stuff. But this was before that. Buffalo Springfield, short-lived. Cool group.
Yeah.
All right, we got some new albums out this Friday, May 5th. David, are you ready?
I think I am.
All right. Go for it.
Blood Ceremony, The Old Ways, Burning Bitches, The Dark Tower, Currents, Death We Seek, Curse of Cain, Dave Lombardo, Rites of Percussion, Death Coals, The Garden of Dead Flowers, Death Stars, Everything Destroys You, The Devil Wears Prada, Color Decay, Die Humane, The Grotesque Drain, Living Proof, Enforcer, Nostalgia, Herod, The Iconoclast, Jerome's Dream, The Gray in Between, The Modern Age Slavery, 1901, Smashing Pumpkins, Atum,
10 seconds.
Smoky Mirror, Smoky Mirror, Teeth, Biblical Worship, Violence, Tigers of Pantang, Bloodlines, Therapy, Cold Fire, Unearth, The Wretched, The Ruinous, Winter Sea, Woven in Ashes, Weathers, Are You Having Fun? Wigger 7!
Yay!
Did I get it?
You got it, dude.
Right at the... Oh, man.
That was an impressive feat. You made it. All of those
albums.
What
do I get?
Nothing. Okay. You get a copy of...
Do I get the...
Tigers of Pantang.
Okay. I don't get a vinyl with semen in it or something. Like, that's the next one.
Vinyl
that
with
would
semen.
Be Marilyn
yeah,
Manson's
yes.
like, your version of that.
Or throw up or something like that.
Yeah,
puke-filled vinyl.
Vinyl.
Oh, that's horrible. Okay. Movie, TV, entertainment news this week.
Oh, yay.
Everyone cared about this, the Met Gala, you know, but the big, big news was the cockroach that crashed the Met Gala. Did you see about the cockroach that crashed the Met Gala?
Insects are doing great things.
They are. They're
it's
making
like
a name for themselves.
Mike Pence's head.
I know. They're having a moment. So
right?
Look at Variety. Look at Variety had this post on their social media.
Did it die?
Yes,
did
it did.
Did they kill it?
They killed it. Brutally
in the actual
on the broadcast.
Come on.
Yes, there was this cockroach that started crawling on the steps as they were awaiting stars, and they're like, oh, look at the cockroach is here, and people started taking photos of it, and then some jerk photographer
come on,
stepped
man.
On it
on the carpet that's gross.
I know, right? And so they had to do this in memoriam for the Met Gala cockroach and
shoo it away.
It was,
and then
it was shameful.
It somewhere
yeah.
else.
Come on, deep sadness. We must report the Met Gala cockroaches.
How do you feel about cockroaches?
I think they're aliens and they're gonna take over the world eventually and kill us. And enslave us.
Cockroaches are they're
crazy.
They're
and
gross.
I don't trust them. And I feel like they were very big at one time, and that scares me.
The I've eaten the big ones in Thailand.
I don't think I could do that here. I don't think I could do that. More movie, TV, entertainment news. WGA strike, of course, is big. SNL canceling their shows. Foo Fighters was set to perform. It was their first time since the death of Taylor Hawkins, so it was a big deal for the Foo Fighters. They had to cancel that because of the WGA strike. Drew Barrymore dropping out of the MTV Movie Awards. WGA strike just continues with that. What do you think of this whole... We don't need to get in the weeds and get political or anything, but just what do you think of this WGA strike? Me, personally, I feel like this is a parallel of 20 years ago when this happened to the music industry. When streaming services started taking over music, they were not being compensated properly. And the streaming services that were trying to be set up at that time were not giving the artists what they deserve. And I still feel like they're not getting what they deserve. There's been progress made, but I feel like... The TV and streaming and movie industry is the infancy stage of that as well, and they need to be compensated for this new type of era of streaming. So that's my two cents on it. What do you think?
I mean, I agree.
Yeah.
My feeling about the the lurch towards streaming or the tendency towards not getting writers to write a show and doing reality TV instead.
Right.
I mean, I'll admit, I like some reality TV, but you know, to be honest with you, it does often, like, it's mind-numbing. Like, it's not interesting. Like,
no.
It's just... So, I mean, it's one of those things that you watch it, the initial shock is you get that in 5 minutes, and then
for
the
reality
of the show,
TV, you're talking
for reality
about. Yeah,
show, you know what's going to happen, right?
Yep.
And then the rest of the show, they're just stringing you along and giving you just a little bit, right? Just enough so that you don't change the channel, but never really doing much.
No.
And then they're making bank, right? Whereas you can watch a show well written that really draws you into a story and
that's
actually helps you to escape from life for a little while.
Right. And I mean, they may not get anything for that.
Right? It's worth something. Like, that is worth something.
And I think that needs to be, adjusted for instead of just, like, who's watching reality television, the numbers are through the roof, and the writing is minimal compared to writing is very top-notch and the streaming numbers are minimal. And they're not being compensated for genuine work that's either winning Oscars or being recognized as significant and appropriate or not appropriate, but, innovative. Revolutionary, attention grabbing, all those things, but maybe it's just not hitting the mark of streaming numbers, and so they don't get that kind of residual that they've been used to. And
it's a general thing, and with the on-demand sort of data generating industry now that we have, that
it needs
and
to
it's
be
in
adjusted.
It's in every realm. I mean, it's happening in education too.
Like, education, music, movies, entertainment, everything. It needs to be adjusted for the modern era. So. Figure it out, guys. All right. This was a big deal as well. $3 billion breakup fee. Microsoft is going to have to pay Activision $3 billion if this acquisition fails. It's the biggest acquisition in media history. The UK's Competition and Markets Authority are pulling a red flag on them. They're saying, ha, this is not legal. They're rejecting the deal due to its concerns over its impact on competition in cloud gaming. While both companies plan to appeal this decision, it is unlikely now that the deal will go through. In the event of a failed acquisition, Microsoft will have to pay Activision Blizzard a $3 billion breakup fee. So,
so this is like, at this point, they will have to pay $3 billion. It's not like if they progress to a certain point
situation. It's not what that isn't exactly the headline. It says now that they're trying to appeal the decision. There's hope for an appeal, but it's most likely
that this will be the decision.
Yep. It hasn't officially been announced yet, but most likely they say 70 to 80% chance that it's not going to happen.
And well, you know me. I like this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think honestly these I think honestly these companies were trying to take too big of a piece of the pie, and I got to kind of agree with the UK's Competition and Markets Authority. I feel like that they're a little more for the consumer in this regard compared to the United States. And yeah. I feel like the UK has a little more restriction on that stuff, and I think it's a good thing. So I feel like they need to go back to the drawing board, and I feel like they tried to do this kind of, sweeping takeover of this gaming industry. And I feel like it pushes so many small developers and businesses out of the marketplace that, I agree with this, even though it's kind of a hard pill to swallow. I don't think it should go through. So we'll see what happens. They are going to appeal. Okay, speaking of the UK, the Coronation Quiche controversy. The coronation has been happening all weekend. I'm sure you've been tuning in nonstop.
Oh, yeah.
Watching all the footage,
totally.
Right?
I'm a real
coronation
kook. Yeah, coronation kook.
That's what I think they're called, coronation kooks.
Coronation connoisseur.
There you go. I like that better. That's right. That's classier. That's a little classier. So, what do you think about the coronation quiche?
You look that is that it?
That's like, the coronation
that's
quiche.
The very
that is the very coronation quiche.
So the king ate it? Or
no,
what?
No.
This is the recipe.
This is the recipe.
What does it have in it?
Okay, well that's what's of controversy.
They're like.
So check this out.
It's the harvest of empire.
It's criticized from a variety of different angles. For some, the addition of beans to the dish is strange. Others believe it's tone deaf to release an egg-heavy recipe during a time when the UK is being affected by an egg shortage. Still others question the inclusion of the lard in the pastry when so many people don't eat pork products. There's also the debate as to whether or not the dish actually counts as a quiche. Check this out. Despite the quiche's negative reception, the Great American Baking Show host, Prue Leith, has weighed in on this, okay? She thinks it's an excellent dish. It's an inclusive... So, this inclusive interview, the chef said this. The chef at Buckingham Palace has made a recipe for a quiche, which is absolutely delicious. She also defends the quiche against another area of criticism, that it's supposedly not British enough. Every single supermarket sells quiche, and every child goes to school and eats quiche, so it has become British. Britain has always borrowed other people's food, so I don't have a problem with that. End quote.
As someone with a mostly British ancestry, I will say it's a good thing they borrow other people's food.
It has spinach, fava beans. Oh, I forget the actual recipe, but people didn't like that it had spinach. They didn't like that it had beans, a couple different things. They weren't saying it was... Do you think it's British enough? Do you think a quiche represents Britain?
I'm going to say quiche is British.
Yeah. Wow. That's a bold statement.
It is.
I'm going to...
This is my question, though. It's like... Wait, what? Like, so the king is going to eat this? Yeah. That, like, this is a...
Okay. It's part... It's like the royal, like, yeah.
So people are paying attention to this? To that
It's
degree?
One of the things, yeah.
Like the... All right.
It's one of those things.
Oh, man. So,
the coronation quiche.
The coronation quiche, and then, like, where the king goes to take a dump after.
Where,
like,
the eggs are sourced, where the beans
British
come
toilet.
From. Yes.
It has a bidet on it.
I know.
Right?
I know.
That just, come on.
All right.
Like,
let's get into some good news, because this is good news. AI being used for something good. We talk about all the bad things AI is being used for. Doctors now, scientists, researchers, have developed an AI model that can accurately identify cancer, potentially speeding up diagnosis and treatment. Of course, cancer leading death, cause of death globally, 10 million deaths annually. This new AI tool, designed by experts at the Royal Marsden NHS Foundation Trust, Institute of Cancer Research London, and Imperial College London, can identify cancerous abnormal growths found on CT scans. The development could help detect cancer early and improve patient outcomes. So this is kind of an example of how it reads it. It's able to, like, find these anomalies in your skin and
so is this
detect,
like
the red.
But this is a CT scan. This is not like you hold your phone up to your back. And
like, right, like, no. This isn't like the new app.
QR code, right?
Oh, look, he's got the melanoma
cancer
code.
QR code.
Right?
No, this is supposedly on a CT scan. But I think this is an exaggeration.
I mean,
because
it looks like the QR situation.
I know.
I would like that.
I think this is a graphical. I don't think this is accurate in terms of how it actually works, but I think it's meant to show here's two red squares that are bad, here's the yellow ones that could be bad, and here's all the other ones that are smaller type of deal.
Okay.
And the AI is able to tell and zero in on which ones are worse compared to others type of thing.
Okay. And I mean, shoot. I personally, you know, I don't think that anyone would argue that it's bad to have all of... Well, I know. Actually, that's wrong. A lot of people argue that it's bad to have the AI. So, but, I mean, for me, it's always like, hey, just as long as in the end, these are, you know, this technology is used for liberatory purposes rather than just for rich people to get richer, then I'm good. That's the problem. Is that's what it's.
I wish it was used
for rich people.
I wish it was just used for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, this
and not
kind of
the
stuff
other.
Is great, right?
So hopefully, do more of this, AI people. All right, last story of the week. Scottish island is for sale for under $200,000.
Dude,
ever want to own your own island? Well, a piece of Scotland is for sale for $188,000. It's isolated and uninhabited, the Barloco Island. It's 25 acres large, located 6 miles from the closest town. However, the island does not include a home. The island cannot be connected to any energy grid as well. A new resident could install solar panels. The island can be reached on foot during low tide, but a boat is required when the water rises. They say, quote, "The Pebble Beach is a delight and the perfect base to explore the island. Partake in cold water swimming, or go to anchor a boat and enjoy a waterside picnic." So, what do you think of that? Apparently, I was reading further, I didn't copy it. A section of this land is protected by the British government for preserving the land and nature and things like that, so you cannot build on it. So I feel like that's probably a big hindrance and why this island is for sale, is that you can't build on it. You can't put any electricity on it. But I do think it's kind of cool. What do you think?
Someone's already bought it?
I don't know. Maybe.
I'll take it.
It just went on.
I will take it.
This just went up for sale this week.
Is it on Zillow?
It might be. Yeah.
You know what?
Look it up. Barloco Island.
I'm going to, after this is done,
Barloco
Island. I'm going to get it. Because, so it's 25 acres large. I mean, that's...
Yeah, it's significant.
The picture here doesn't really do it justice. No. I mean, is that some forest on there?
There's some vegetation and stuff. They say that there's wildlife out there of some kind. Animals
Man,
and birds.
You could chop down the wood for your your stone fireplace.
The thing that worries me is that you can't... The whole thing of building a structure and electricity... That it seems like more of like an island that you would go and visit during the day.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't stay out there overnight. Maybe you would camp. But it seems like, you know, not really an island that you could pull that off on.
Well, out there in the sea, you know, You're going to have a worry about some tsunamis and...
Or Nessie. We're in Scotland.
All right.
Dude, what if Nessie... That's why nobody lives there is because Nessie eats everybody that lives there.
Picks them right off
that's
the island.
That's Nessie's
island.
Got
a long neck, right?
Yeah.
That'll reach in... What is it? It's only... You got to only have reach about... Five acres in.
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
And you got to the middle of the
her
island.
Her neck
go to the
probably
around
reaches
the other,
the other side of the island.
Right?
Probably just swimming up and down it the whole time.
Man.
Freaking... Who knows? But that's pretty cool. Hey, you got 188,000. You can own your own island. That is pretty cool. That's
you don't have to be no, I'm not going to. No Jeffrey Epstein jokes.
Don't do that. Everything at rocknewsweekly.com. All socials at Rock News Weekly every Sunday, twitch.tv/Rock News Weekly on demand, YouTube at Rock News Weekly. If you enjoyed our episode, however you're listening, please rate our podcast in the Apple and Google stores. We appreciate it, guys. We'll catch you guys next time. Have a good rest of your week. All right. Peace.